The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities,
celebrating 50 years of excellence.
Type this into YouTube. How to speak Boston. This is what you get.
The first one you probably want to try to master is, hi, how are ya?
Two blondes were in a parking lot, trying to unlock the door of their car.
Ben or Yui, get on the rotary, take Route 3 to Route 95.
There are a million and one people ready to help. Louis Cronin, though, isn't one of them. She went in the other direction. When she was young, she had a Boston accent.
And I think it wasn't really, really strong, but it was, you know, every single word that Bostonians pronounce strangely, I pronounce strangely.
Like this.
Corner.
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 Yeah, corner. Like some people might say, corner, on the corner. I wasn't that strong, but I said corner.
So when did you try to stop talking Boston?
I know exactly when it was. I was in high school, and I was probably a sophomore in high school. And I was in the choir, and I was hearing everybody sing. And I think that we were singing that song, Try to Remember the Days of September.
Try to remember.
And I had this moment where I heard them singing, and I heard, Try to Remember the Days of September.
Like the whole choir?
Yeah, the whole choir. It was like, you know, a local school here in Cambridge. And the whole choir is singing this with a Boston accent. And I thought, there's an R in there. We sound stupid. We sound really dumb. And I was just like, boom. I said, I'm changing my accent.
In today's pod, the many reasons why we change our accents. And sometimes, why we don't. New York, of course, is the first port of call for many immigrants in America. And for a few, the few who can afford it, there is the option of working with a coach. A coach in the accent modification business. Here's Alina Simone.
On the fourth floor of an unassuming office building a couple of blocks from Trump Tower, immigrant clients of Accents Off are preparing for battle, running through their survival words. Only survival in this case depends on nailing the pronunciation of words like miserable, vegetable, and wholesale.
You have to use them. So you need them to survive, but you can't, and so you drown.
Ilya Nasanov was born in Estonia, grew up speaking Russian, and came to New York to work at an Australian bank. When he arrived, he sounded like this.
Please call Stella. Ask her to bring these things with her from the store.
At his old job at the Russian branch of the bank, his English wasn't an issue. Everyone sounded like him.
There, I was sort of local, so it was a bit easier. I could get away with it. But here, I'm clearly foreign. And that was a foreign accent, and I had to fix something. That extra second that it takes, that it took them to, and still takes probably, to translate my English into their English.
For some immigrants, accent modification is just a matter of self-improvement. But for many, it's a means of getting a job or keeping one, making sure you're competitive, shaving off that extra second. Many immigrants may want help with their accents, but accent coaching isn't cheap. So there are not a lot of cab drivers here at the company founded by Rochelle D'Olivera.
Kill the accent! I heard that once.
Rochelle projects the confidence of a news anchor and the poise of a pianist, which she actually was before becoming a speech pathologist and founding Accents Off. When she started out 6 years ago, her clients were mostly actors. Today, the majority are professionals, filling Midtown offices just like this one.
I have had people come in here tearful and concerned that they may be losing their job if they don't work on their speech. Some of them, however, are concerned that their accent is holding them back. They're concerned about the impression that they're making in the company. They just want to make sure that they have everything working in their favor.
This free-floating anxiety is backed by a growing body of scientific research that shows, yeah, employers really do discriminate against accented Americans.
Even for positions which didn't require face-to-face or linguistic contact, people said, no, I'm much less likely to hire this person because of their speech.
Dennis Preston is a professor of linguistics at the University of Oklahoma, a pioneer in the field of perceptual dialectology, the study of how people react to variations in language. Accent bias goes deep enough to affect how well we understand people of different ethnic and linguistic backgrounds, even when their English is perfect. One study, Preston explains, involved playing a recording of someone speaking English, but identifying the speaker as either white or Asian. People were asked to react.
And when they were looking at an Asian face, they actually understood it less well.
Yeah, the very same speaker with a different face. The impact our eyes have on what we're hearing?
It very seldom has anything really to do with language, that it has to do with a transfer of stereotypes about people to language.
Discriminating against people because of their ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender, have become widespread social taboos. But discriminating against how people talk?
You're not supposed to make fun of people with Asian faces, but it's okay to criticize accents.
And it's not just people with foreign accents. It's Americans with regional accents, especially from the South. Call it language profiling. And that's where going to a class to lose your accent gets controversial.
For us, it means that it's one of the symbols that people are used to treating other people who are not very much like them badly. And in this case, of course, they have the support of some people who point to dictionaries. These are people who usually don't see what's actually in dictionaries, but point to them, or to English teachers or to grammar books, but unknowingly, because they don't know what English teachers really know and believe, and they've probably never really seen a grammar book. But they take a great deal of comfort in the idea that somewhere out there, there's an English which is completely unmarked. This, of course, is like a unicorn or a tooth fairy or anything else. Every time you open your mouth, you mark yourself as being a member of something.
In 2014, managers at Oak Ridge National Laboratory, a federal science and technology lab in East Tennessee, decided to offer a, quote, Southern accent reduction class. Here's the email that was sent to thousands of employees. Feel confident in a meeting when you need to speak with a more neutral American accent, and be remembered for what you say, and not how you say it.
If I had received that letter, I would have probably been very upset with that letter.
This is Todd Matthews, a friend of mine who lives in Tennessee, about an hour and a half from Oak Ridge.
What if I'd sent somebody in New York or Michigan a note saying, I'm going to help you get rid of your northern accent? You know, can you imagine the flip that that would be if somebody told you, Elaine, I need to help you get rid of your speaking problem. And you didn't realize you had a speaking problem.
Todd actually works for a different federal program where he serves as director of communications. Yes. Communications. He's definitely familiar with the kind of accent bias linguist Dennis Preston discussed.
Before somebody puts me in an uncomfortable spot and then we have this a little bit of tension with somebody looking at you like, I don't understand what you're saying. You know, I will say I am the director of case management communications and I am from Tennessee and they knew that when they hired me. So I'll try to, you know, if I'm speaking to somebody, so we'll all have a life and then that kind of breaks the tension where you're not getting people looking sideways at you. So I know everything's going through their mind. Why is that person in that chair?
So what about the Tennessee residents invited to participate in the Southern Accent Reduction Class? The implication that their accent, ergo their identity, was something to be reduced, neutralized, or forgotten did not go over well. The lab ended up canceling the class and publicly apologizing. Okay, back to the non-Americans studying with Rochelle de Oliveira in New York. Sounding a bit more American, however you define that, is a desirable thing for these students. It's also among the most difficult, and regardless of how hard you work, success depends on factors that aren't all under your control, like which language you grew up speaking and your age.
By the time people get into their teens, it becomes more tricky, and it's more of an uphill battle for sure. When you get into your late teens, early 20s, it can still be done.
But it takes longer, Rochelle says. Your oral apparatus, lips, tongue, jaw, throat, function like a machine, precision tooled to produce the sounds of your native tongue. To learn a different accent, you have to understand how that machine works, take it apart, and reassemble it. Rochelle's an expert in all that.
If I speak with Russian accent, I have to move the throat. I have to move the energy into the throat area a little bit more, like this. If I'm speaking in a more like English accent, I have to move it all forward and make it more narrow like that. But if I want to go back to American, then I have to find that very nice big open space in the middle of the mouth and let the sounds roll around in there.
Aside from mouth mechanics, students also struggle with something called sound confusion, the inability to distinguish sounds, some of which may not even exist in their language, like th. And that's an easy one. Say you're an American trying to learn Thai.
Thai is a tonal language. So you have, for example, ga 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 ga. These are all five different words. Ga 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 ga, right?
This is Lisa Trompagob, an engineer at Google and another former student at Accents Off. Speakers of Asian languages, Rochelle says, face a much more difficult task in emulating a standard American accent.
The tongue is very low in the mouth for Asian accents. And for example, they have trouble with L, final L at the end of a word. For example, people. You'll hear a Chinese person, instead of saying people, they'll say people. And getting that tongue into position up behind the upper front teeth on the palate, very, very difficult for them. The tongue is not used to having to rise up and perform these movements that American English requires.
Like, just keep doing that for a while. To like, stretching your tongue, right? Like, to move your tongue back and forth for R and L, yeah.
Most of the professionals who come to Accents Off aren't trying to erase their identities or morph into Terry Gross. They just want to remove the friction from everyday conversation, make their lives and, yeah, their jobs easier. Before we say goodbye, I ask Ilya, the student from Estonia, what his survival words are. You know, the words that you really need to say correctly to survive the English-speaking world. He's a banker, so I was expecting words like liquidity and amortize. But instead,
there are some funky long words like synchronized and thunderstorm and characteristics. And like, I just couldn't tell the same.
They were these your survival words?
They were my survival.
Thunderstorm?
Thunderstorm, yeah.
The notorious TH. I grew up making fun of my Russian father for saying thank you instead of thank you. Sorry, Dad. Well, next time there's a big thunderstorm here in New York, I think Ilya's gonna make himself understood.
Alina Simone. So, Louis Cronin, who I was talking to at the top of the podcast, when she started to lose her Boston accent when she was a teenager, it wasn't easy. Especially R's. It's kind of a problem that I have too. The Boston accent famously doesn't pronounce R's. And Louis knew that, so she added them back in, sometimes in the wrong places.
Pizza and, you know, Poller, my good friend Poller. Your brain tells you to put in an R whenever you hear the sound.
Louis's friends at high school started laughing at her. Even her mom made fun of her. It was like she was trying to sound like someone else.
I think also because I grew up here in Cambridge and Boston, there were always people who didn't sound like us. There were people who sounded like us and people who sounded like the snots, you know, the Harvard people. They sounded different and they weren't us. So when I started putting in the R's, it was like I was, you know, betraying my class, betraying my, you know, background.
And what about your other siblings? Did anybody else try this?
I think pretty much all of my siblings have gotten rid of them. And it's just interesting because I just came back from California, where one of my brothers, my cousin, and one of my best friends from Boston all live.
Right. California, where accents go to die.
Yeah. All three of them don't have an accent anymore. And I mean, I think the rate at which they lost them varied. Like, I had worked hard to lose mine, so mine was fast. And my brother, I think, had also lost his pretty fast. But my cousin and my best friend, theirs were slower. But now there are, I really don't hear the accent.
And did they have similar motivations for losing their accents?
No. I think that for them, it just sort of happened. Like, by osmosis or something. So I don't think they did what I did, which...
Yeah, you were hardcore.
I was hardcore. I was like, I'm getting rid of this. This is going, you know.
Lou is a writer now. She's written a novel. She read an excerpt of that in a previous part. And the setting for the novel, it's where she grew up, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Those attitudes, especially when it came to how you sound, they rubbed off on her.
You know, it was part of growing up, like with Harvard and all these institutions telling you this is the right way to speak. You know?
Like you wanted to be taken seriously.
Exactly, exactly. I wanted people to think I was smart, you know? I thought of it as right and wrong. It was just that I was falling for the received wisdom about how you're supposed to speak around here.
Is there anything you regret now about losing the accent?
No. No, not really. I mean, it's funny because, like, I can slip into it. Like, if I'm talking to somebody who has a really strong accent, I might not slip into dropping my R's, but I slip into a rhythm and a way of talking that is, it's friendly. You get into a rhythm, and like, so I know I go in and out depending on who I'm talking to.
Still to this day.
Still. Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, my aunts who still have an accent, and it's...
You're code switching.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I had this funny experience. I went to a writer's colony, and there was another writer there who was also from Boston. And, well, she was from Lowell. And she had lost her accent. But the minute we saw each other, we were, like, in Chicago. We started talking like this to each other, and hi, honey, and mother, and, you know, we did it for, like, 2 whole weeks. We spoke in Boston accents together, you know.
That's awesome. You feel good.
It felt good, yeah. And it was partly that, okay, we're, you know, both local Bostonians, and we're somewhere else, and let's, you know. Yeah, it was like we had our own secret language, you know.
Louis Cronin. Her novel is called Everyone Loves You Back. Okay, that's the pod for this week. There are photos and links to a bunch of stuff that was mentioned today, all at pri.org/language. You can also get there from Facebook. There's a World in Words page. If you want to get in touch with me, the best way is on Twitter. I'm at Patry Cox. That's PatriCox. Thanks today to Tina Toby, who makes the show. Also to Jonathan Dyer, Lauren Rothering, and Andrew Sussman, and our friend and fellow podcaster Rupa Shenoy, who you may have heard in previous pods. Her podcast Otherhood has got a new season starting January 15th. There'll be episodes about adoptees, also race and identity in Hollywood, and 1 year after the deadly light rail attacks in Portland, Oregon, some stories from there, the difference between Portland and Portlandia. That's it for this time. Thanks for listening. Nina, or I, or both of us, will be back soon.
The World in Words
is made possible in part
by the National Endowment for the Humanities,
celebrating 50 years of excellence.